I'm going to start.
Okay.
You can see?
Yeah.
A good evening, everyone. We want to welcome you to our new course. The title of the course is My God. My God. Oh, my God. Defining what's my God. And I was really hesitant to start this course in this community because, first of all, everyone has a lot of questions about God. Questions that's hard to answer because I personally also have questions. So why should I take a course and give a course on something that is a very challenging course, and this course is going to cover 25 of the most difficult questions about God. And we not only we're going to answer them, but we're going to give you a whole different perspective on these 25 questions. So you're going to walk out from this course with 25 different levels of answering these 25 questions. But the truth is it a good thing to ask questions? Is that Jewish? Is that sacrilegious that we ask questions? Or we just say, listen, this is what God wants, or this is what God is. Don't ask questions, you know? So I would like to just start with something very important. There was once an atheist, a Jewish atheist, that he had, two or three children. He didn't want to send them to a Jewish school because in Jewish school they're going to teach them about God, and he doesn't believe in God. He didn't want to send them to public school because over there, whatever, it's not a school to go to. So he decided to send to a private Christian school. At least it won't be Jewish, but it won't be public, so it'll be like halfway. So after a few weeks, the children come home and they start to teach their father about the Trinity. Trinity is like this triple entity of a father and a mother and a son. It's a whole... I mean, I don't know all the details, but I know it's called Trinity. It's like a triumph.
The whole family.
So, the father comes home, and the son tells the father, you know, we learned today about the Trinity, about this, blah, 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 blah. The father got so upset. He said, I can't believe it. I send you to a Christian school, and now they're teaching you about Trinity? He says, listen, my son, I want to tell you something. Remember this forever. We're Jewish. We don't believe in any Trinity. There's no such a thing. We only have, as Jews, we only have one God, and that's the God I don't believe in. But this joke, I think, is very serious. What I mean to say is, this course is not going to discuss if there is a God. Because that everyone, even an atheist, it's a conscious. You just know there is a God. Maybe you don't want to call it God. You want to call it a supreme being. You want to call it a power of powers. I don't know, whatever name you want to give it to. But everyone intrinsically feels there is something. The reason I'm an atheist is because I have a lot of questions. I don't understand this, I don't understand that, I don't understand that. Good, that's a good thing. That we're going to discuss today. But we're not going to discuss, and we're not going to have a discussion if there is a God. That you could send your kids to Christian schools, and then when they come home with Trinity, you'll tell them, we only have one God, we don't believe in. That you could do. But here we're going to have a lot of discussion about God. So that's number one. Number two, Someone once had a discussion with God, and he asked God, God, I want to ask you a question. 1 million years of our years, not of God's years, of our human years, what is it in your comparison? So God said, for me, your 1 million years is 1 minute. So our 1 million years for God is 1 minute. Then the Jew asks a second question. He says, God, you know, I just heard someone won $2 billion in California lottery. God, what is $2 billion for you? Tell me, God, what is $2 billion for you? So God says, for me, $2 billion is 1 penny. So the guy says to God, God, can you give me 1 penny? If a $2 billion is 1 penny, could you give me 1 penny? God says, no problem, in 1 minute. He's just going to wait. You understand the point I'm bringing out or not? So what's the point? We are assuming God and we're trying to figure it out. But we have to understand as individuals, what are we trying to figure out? Now, this is where I want to get to, which is shocking. In Jewish fundamental principles and Jewish philosophy and the Torah, we must try to understand God. You cannot use the word, I believe, and that's enough. You know why? He says that not only is that part of the Jewish fundamental, the whole reason why you were created to begin with is for you to try to know God as much as you could. Why is that? For 2 reasons. One is, when you want to build a relationship with anyone, like let's say a spouse, before you met, the first time you meet, and you want to build a relationship, you got to know each other. The more you know the person, the more you can connect to. There's no way a person could connect to someone and say, I just believe. I'm marrying this spouse, I don't know who they are, I just believe. Imagine, you get married to someone, I don't know who they are. I just believe. So it's kind of I call it a black marriage, meaning black male marriage, like you don't know what's going on, you just say, okay. That's not the way we could connect our soul with our mind. Your soul believes in God, great. But your mind has to also understand and connect to it, or else you're not in it. It's like, I believe in God, but it has nothing to do with me. So the only way a human being could really connect to God is knowing as much as they could to know about God. So in Torah, we emphasize you gotta learn and understand and know and connect as much as you could. So these 25 questions that we're going to discuss in this course is going to help us that by the time you finish this course, you're going to understand God, or I put it better, I don't like to use the word understand God, but you'll know God. Knowing comes from the word connection. Like Adam knew Eve, connected. So you'll be able to connect to God on a much deeper level because you'll know a lot more about what God is about. If you go to you have a book, page 4. You have page 4? You have page 4? It's on the bottom of the page. It's text 2. You can see it or it's not read, yeah? Okay, so this is very important. That's why I'm saying it to you. And I want to emphasize that's a major difference between Jewish religion and any other religion. In Jewish religion, We gotta know. We gotta ask. We gotta learn. We gotta know. It's not just faith. It doesn't work. Here, Norman. Over here.
Which one?
The front row.
Older.
Read text 2, Rabbi Edward, text 2 in English.
Sure.
Loud, so everyone could hear.
Sure. The entirety of human existence and purpose is to gain intimate knowledge of God's glory and majestic splendor, each individual to the extent of their intellectual capacity. This goal is stated in the Zohar, Raya Magna Parshat Po. God created the world in order that they may know Him.
So why did God create the world? That you should know Him. Get to know God. The only way you're going to get to know God is if you ask questions. So the 25 questions we're going to ask, we're not going to do it in one night, 25 questions. We're going to divide it. Tonight we're going to cover 4 questions, deep questions. And by understanding the process of these questions and answers, you'll get to know God. And when you get to know God, you'll connect to it. So there is your soul believes in God. Like the atheists that send the kids to the Christian school, but no Trinity, but the God we don't believe. Because the soul believes in God. But the question is your mind connected? That's what our mission is. In text 3, on page 5, you have page 5, text 3? Look what it says there. Rav Sadia Goyen, that lived close to 1,000 years ago, look what he writes, why it's important to know God and ask questions. Read, we engage. Edward, go.
We engage in philosophic and intellectual probes of the principles of our faith for 2 reasons. First, to intellectually confirm that which we already know, having been so informed by God's prophets. Second, to empower ourselves to respond to those who take issue with our beliefs.
So we have to learn about God and ask a lot of questions and know God. One is to know what we already believe in, but to know it in our mind, not just to believe it. Number 2, if people ask questions, we'll know what to answer. But the truth is, it's the questions that you ask yourself to know how to answer yourself. It doesn't have to be strange people. It's yourself asking yourself questions. What's the answer to this? So, basically, in Judaism, you must know God. And you have to ask and learn and understand so you can know. The more you'll know, the more you'll connect, and the more you'll feel connected to God. So what are we going to discuss today? Today we're going to discuss 4 questions. First question is, what is God? What is God? Number 2, where is God? On page 6. Number 3, how did God come to be? And number 4, is God a he, she, or a they? Today it's very common because everyone, even humans, could be sometimes a she, sometimes a he, sometimes a they. It depends on the day. But the question is, what is God? Is God a she, a he, a they, or what? So the first question is, what is God? So I want to start with a little story. Anyone heard of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Bardichev? Anyone ever heard of him?
Yes.
So in his town, there was a big atheist. Everyone knew this atheist. He was the biggest atheist in town, in Bardichev. So one time, the atheist meets Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Bardichev and he gives him a whole mouthful how God doesn't exist and a whole how doesn't the world is a big bang and everything, the whole thing, and the monkeys came first and then the humans and our grandfather is a monkey and my mother's grandfather was an ape and everything, everything the way. Yeah. And therefore he doesn't believe in God. So Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Bardichev said to him, I want to tell you a little secret. Actually, me and you have a lot in common. says, what do we have in common? He says, the God that you don't believe in, I also don't believe in that God. He said, what do you mean? He says, the God that you're denying, I also deny that God, because that God doesn't exist. But if you would know what the real God is, you would not deny it. It's just we have a pre-assumption of what we think God should be or God is, and therefore we deny it. The God you're denying and the God you say doesn't exist, I also agree doesn't exist. Because that God never existed and will never exist. So in order to really understand what is God, the first thing you got to do is first undo the misconception of what you think God is. Once you take apart the God that you made up it is, then I can start to help you what God really is. So I want to show you a video. It's only 3 minutes. That Avraham Avinu, our first Jew, which we learned in the Parsha this week and last week, he actually had to do that. In his times, no one believed in a God that we're believing in. They believed in these idols. If you worship the idol, it's going to rain. If you worship this idol, it's going to be more sun. If you worship this idol, you're going to get healthy. So for him to introduce God, he first had to undo unconstruct the wrong conception of what God is to start rebuilding the real God. So we'll watch a 3-minute presentation of how he undid the misconception so you can start rebuilding your mind. So we need to rebuild our mind by getting rid of our notion of what we think God is. Then we'll be able to understand what God is.
So, you want to know more about God? Let's start with your current conception of God. Is he a big, mighty guy in the sky, tugging at the puppet strings of the universe? Does he spend his days golfing with the righteous on lush heaven greens? Is he angry and vengeful, or wise and kind? We all have conceptions of God picked up along our developing years. But before we delve into secrets of God's being, we need to do some inner household cleaning. You see, thousands of years ago, young Abraham had a similar problem. At the time, people were searching for coherence in a universe that seemed random. So they devised an elaborate system of multiple powers who each were responsible for a different function. If you got the rain god happy, you got more rain. If the sun god was pleased, you got more sun for your crops. Then the wise men decided that each god was associated with a figure and shape, an idol that you could conveniently buy from your local idol shop. And these figurines had the power to grant or deny your deepest needs and wishes. Abraham's father, Terah, had just such a shop, and he made the mistake of asking Abraham to man the sales floor for a day. An old woman walked in. "Young man, an idol, please, for my arthritis. Which of these gods is good for my knees?" "How old are you?" Abraham asked. 60, replied the woman. "You poor thing," Abraham said. 60 years old and bowing down to an object that was made yesterday. Embarrassed, the woman slinked away. Next, a woman came in with a plate filled with fine flour. "Take this, young man, and offer it to the idols." But Abraham had a different idea. He took a club and smashed all the idols. He then put the club in the hand of the largest idol. When Terah came to the stall, he was furious. "What have you done to the idols?" "I must be honest with you," Abraham responded. "A woman came with a plate of fine flour and asked me to offer it to them. When I set it before them, one of the idols exclaimed, "I'm starving! I will eat first." Another quickly protested, "No, I will eat first." That started a huge fight. What a scene! The largest idol then stood up, grabbed that club, and smashed the rest of them. "Are you mocking me?" Terah shouted. "Do the idols have any awareness?" Abraham smiled. "Exactly." Abraham went on to teach people what God is not. Before humanity could begin to know what God is, they had to unlearn their crooked conception of him. We are not so different from school or from home or from Hollywood. We ingest portraits of God that stay stuck in stone, not growing with us as we mature and our intelligence blossoms. If and when we decide we want to expand our understanding of God, we must first do what Abraham did. We have to unlearn before we learn. Before constructing God, we need to deconstruct.
Is this clear, the message? There's a famous expression we read in the Torah. God created humans in his image. And you know what humans did? Created God in their image. You know, again. God created us, that's what the Torah says, in his image. We created a God in our image, meaning we're picturing in our mind
an imagination,
and that's the God with thing. So God created us in his image, and we, in turn, what did we do him a favor? We created God in our image. That's already a misconception. So we read this little PowerPoint, by the way. It sounds like a funny story, but that's what really happened with Abraham. For us, it sounds strange. Why would someone go to an idol store and buy some little toy and bow down? Because we don't associate with it. In the times of Abraham, that's what the millions of people were doing. So he had to get that out of the system before he got the same thing with us. We have this image of what we think God is or what we think God isn't. And therefore we have to get rid of that image. So what is God? I'll tell you. Text 5, page 10. I know you're waiting so anxiously about God. But when I tell you what it is, you'll be shocked. Page 10. The sages and the Torah calls God HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does it mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The Holy, Holy One. Why did they call God holy? So in Hebrew, when you say holy, HaKadosh, is not really holy. Kadosh means distinct and different. To define God in one line, so you'll always understand what God is, God is absolutely undefinable. There's nothing you could describe what is God. I'll tell you why. You don't have to be a big scientist why. It's very simple. We are humans. We have intellectual capacity is our gift. We want to take our intellect, which is our tool, which we're different than other species, which is our intellect, and we want to try to understand who? God. But you're missing the whole point. God cannot be understood by intellect because God is not intellect. God created intellect. It's like someone saying to you, I'm taking a telescope. You know what a telescope is? To look at the stars. And instead he uses it to eat salad. A telescope you don't use to eat salad. A telescope is made to look at things that are 100 million miles away to make it see close. Or I take a fork so I could touch the stars. I mean, it's not because we're, people think, you know why I can't understand God, who God is. Forget about, we're going to get to understanding God's ways, but God is, because I'm human. No, no, no. God is not something you could grasp with any of our human intellect or emotion, because it's not an intellect. I can take an intellectual thing and understand it with my mind, because my mind understands intellectual things. But I can't take a God that doesn't have any intellect or any definition and understand it with intellect. It's like taking a telescope and eating tomato sauce. It doesn't make sense. I'll give you an interesting story. There was once a group of blind people. I don't know if you know the story. And they lived in a town. It was a town for all blind people. And they heard that an elephant is coming to town. An elephant. But they never saw an elephant. So how are they going to know what an elephant is? So they decided the only way they could comprehend what something is by touching. Because they don't see, so they were touching. So everyone touched the elephant. One touched the foot and said, you know, I think an elephant is like a pole. It's like a big pole, that's what an elephant is. The other one touched the ears. Oh, it feels like a cauliflower. You know what I mean? The other one touched the nose. So everyone had a whole different image what an elephant is, because everyone touched a different part of the elephant. Now this is an animal and a human. When you're speaking about God, God is not an intellectual. God created intellect. God created wisdom. God created understanding. But that's not what God is. So to simplify it, I would say very simple. When you want to define God, you just say one thing. Simple, with no complexity at all. I'll give you one more example. You ever ate an apple? A plain apple? How complex is a plain apple? It's pretty simple. But what happens if you take the apple and you mix flour and eggs and oil and sugar and salt and baking soda? What do you have from that? An apple pie. So now you mixed it and it became a complex apple pie because it's made with a lot of different ingredients. God is not made from different pieces. God doesn't have intellect, emotion, feelings, excitement, anger, anxiety. God is not made with any of that. A human being is a very complex being because it's made from a lot of pieces. 248 organs, 365 limbs, intellect, emotion, feelings, anxiety, anger. You have made from all kinds of parts that make this one human. So you're the most complex being there is, because you have so many pieces. God is not made from pieces. It's just one plain energy. One plain God. So therefore, there's nothing I could do to understand or comprehend, because it's not in the level of a comprehension thing. It's not intellect. It's not even the deepest intellect. It's far beyond that. So I don't have any tools to grasp that. I don't even have the telescope for it. So the only thing I know is about God. Like, I'm going to teach you a lot about God. But God Himself, what He is undefined. That's why they call it HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The distinct, unique, supreme, that has no complexity at all, no parts, no pieces, just one plain entity. Could you understand it? It's just not how you're going to get to it. You can't get to something that's not intellectual with understanding. Could you feel it? We'll see. Maybe you could feel it. But there's no way you could understand it. We'll get to that piece. Akfir is saying that, could I feel God? Okay, we're going to get to it. But it's not something I could understand. So the way the sages put it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, unique, distinct, plain, simplistic, supreme. That's it. There's no parts that make this God. It's just one. You know, like when we say God is one, it's not only saying there's one God. I mean, that, whatever. It's that the whole God is just one. It's one concept. It's one, I can't say even concept. It's one. There's no pieces here. It's not put together with things. God doesn't have intellect, feelings, happy, sad. It's just God. So when you get to that, now we're starting to understand a little, okay. So God is something. God himself. I'm not saying what God does. We're going to get to what God does. But to say to anyone, I can understand what God is, it's like saying I could understand or the telescope is looking at the tomato sauce. It doesn't make sense. It just doesn't work. It's two different worlds. Do I make sense what I just said? Do I make sense? So now that this makes sense, that God is not something I could catch with sense, so now we go to the next question. So where is God? Okay, I can't grasp God with intellect, but where is God? And you know where God is?
Everywhere.
Who said everywhere? He said everywhere. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay, he says God is everywhere. Is that true?
I think so.
You think so? Anyone else want to argue?
Absolutely.
But the everywhere, what do you mean everywhere? Where is everywhere?
Everywhere
is here, right? Everywhere. So that means there's a place called everywhere. And God is in this everywhere.
No place, no specific.
No, it's not a singular location.
So where is it?
It's everywhere.
Well, everywhere is a space.
Everywhere is not a singular location.
Okay, so let me just share with you a little story that happened with two children. An 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. They were like mischief. Mischief is like children that like to make...
Shavavim.
So the mother and parents couldn't handle them, and they heard the rabbi in town knows how to deal with such children. So they brought the mother brought the children to the rabbi, and told the rabbi, you know, these children are just, I don't know what to do. So the rabbi takes the younger child first in his room, and he asks the child one question: where is God? So the child doesn't know what the rabbi means, anything, and his mouth is like opened, and he's like, he doesn't answer. So the rabbi gets a little more excited. He says, where is God? And the kid is like almost about to faint and doesn't give an answer, nothing. So the rabbi this time lost his patience. He says, where is God? And the kid ran out of the room and ran home and was hiding in the closet. So his older brother, the 10-year-old mischief, comes to him and says, what happened? He says, I'll tell you the truth. God is lost and they feel that we stole it and we have it. And he's asking, where is God? So they ran away because he thinks he's being accused that he stole God. Anyways, so the question is, where is God? So the funny thing is, we have two... Huh? You know the story? You ever heard this? No. But anyways, yeah, people think we steal God. So in one pasuk in the Torah, it says God is in the heaven. Where do we see that? In text 7... on page 13. You have page 13? Go to text 7. Read, Rabbi Edward.
Gaze down from the heavens, your holy dwelling place, and bless your people Israel.
Okay, we always we look up to heaven. Like God is in the heavens, right? The Torah says God looks at us from the heaven, and he blesses us. So We find in the Torah this expression that if you want to turn to God, you turn to heaven. Or God comes from heaven and talks to us, or whatever. So that's one reference in the Torah that it's in heaven. But then, in text 8, we say every day, on page 14, say, Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzevakot, Meloi Chol Aretz Kaveh, which means,
Holy, holy, holy is the God of the heavenly hosts. The entire world is filled with His glory.
So what do we see from here? God is everywhere, not in the heaven. So why do we look up to heaven? Why don't we just say, God? What are we, God? God is everywhere. What are we looking up in heaven? Well, like someone says, oh, God. We always, the way we look at God is, oh, God. So that means God is there, God is here, God is everywhere. Where is everyone? So what's going on? God is being everywhere is a little problem. Now let me tell you why. You see this table right over here that's in the front row? If I say to you there's a table and it's 6 feet long and it's in this space. So that makes sense. There's a table and there's a space where the table is standing on. Now could you imagine in your mind this space without the table? Yeah, I could take away the table right now. The space is still there. But the table is not there, right? So you could imagine space without a table.
Sure.
But let me ask you the opposite. Could you imagine a table without space?
Yeah. What?
No.
How? Table itself is a certain
dimension.
It has a width, it has a length, it has a thickness. So if I say to you, there's a table without space, how could the table exist?
If you describe it as 6 feet, as a 6 foot table,
then you don't
but there's no space. The 6 foot is space.
Okay.
So if I say there's no space, can the table exist if there's no space at all?
We can still imagine it.
But I could imagine a space without a table. And then I bring the table in this space. And the table takes up this amount of space. But if I take away and I say there's a table but there's no space at all, how could the table exist?
Table is the space.
The table takes space. You said that? Who said that?
He said.
The table itself takes... You can't have something that's physical and tangible not take space. The fact that it's a physical thing and tangible, that itself takes space.
Sure.
So now let's take God. You say God is everywhere. So in our mind, when we say God is everywhere, I'm just telling you how people look at it. There's a place called everywhere, which is the whole world, the whole universe, all the planets, and God is in it. Okay? He's everywhere. But guess what? If you say God is everywhere, you're limiting Him, that He's in this everywhere space. Imagine there isn't the everywhere. Where is God? Imagine there's no space. Where is God? Is God still there?
Yes.
So therefore, in the Torah language, they change it a little. Listen to this. Instead of saying God is everywhere, you know what you say? Everywhere is God, is in God. You're following a little what I'm saying or no? In other words, it's not that God is in the space of everywhere. The everywhere is in Him. There's no everywhere that He fits. And He fits in everywhere. God doesn't fit in everywhere because everywhere doesn't... Everywhere was created by God. So basically the everywhere, or I will put it in actual words, everywhere is in God. Not God isn't everywhere. But everywhere, that means that whole space and the whole universe and the whole planet and everything that you're thinking of God is in, that everywhere is in God. You get the difference?
Yeah.
or it's a little confusing? Ask questions. You have to ask questions, because if not, because I want, the reason I want you to understand this is because the whole idea of understanding it is to get you to know God better. So when you say God is everywhere, I just want you to understand that our notion is there's a thing that's called everywhere, which is the whole world and all the planets. That's everywhere. And God is there. But I want to tell you that if I say that, it's essentially saying, like, this table is taking space, and God is fitting in all this space. I'm saying deeper than that. That everywhere is in God, because He's not limited to that space. Because He created that space. So if the space wasn't there, God is still there, so to say. For us, it's hard to imagine why. For us, we can't imagine a table without space. For us, there has to be a space that the table fits in. So there is a world that God fits in. And He's all and everywhere in the whole world.
I want to go back to your table analogy, if I may.
Yeah?
And I'm still, it's so long, you're saying, the difference here is, we can't imagine a table when there's no space, because we've experienced the table. We've seen a table, we've sat on a table, we know what it looks like. We don't know what God looks like.
No.
The difference is, we've experienced, we know this, it's tangible, it's touchable. Like, it's here. Hashem's not here.
Okay.
But we can experience and see. And that's a completely different analogy.
Yeah, okay, you're right. But it's the idea, the analogy is not about comparing God and the table, that God is the table is God. It's more the analogy that for us, we can't imagine a table without a space.
To put it in.
And the table itself takes space.
Of course.
We can't imagine it. By God, the space is not what contains God. On the contrary, the God contains the space.
Absolutely, yes.
That's basically it.
Bravo.
Make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
I think to simplify it, God is everything, but everything is not God.
Exactly. So did you realize, Norman, you're not God?
Absolutely.
But God
it's
is
not,
everything.
It's not easy. I'm trying to perceive that.
God is in him.
Huh?
God is in
God
him.
Is in, you got it.
He's in God. Okay, okay.
Together is one.
So, to make it also more connected to us, there was a tzaddik, his name was the Kotzker Rebbe. And there was a group of great rabbis sitting together, and he asked them, where is God? He asked all of them, where is God? So, everyone gave an answer, whatever. He says, God is wherever you let Him in. They said, what do you mean? He says, because God is not something that fits. Wherever you let Him in, He's there automatically. He doesn't have to fit in a space. Even if there's no space, He's there. As long as you let Him in your heart, He'll be there. So, to sum up what I'm trying to say is, read text 9 on page 14.
God is the space of the universe. The universe is not the space of God.
Does that make sense, guys? Make sense?
Yeah.
Revitson, it makes sense? Okay. So, to sum it up on page 15, when you say God is in the heaven, what do you mean by that? God is utterly transcends and beyond us. So when we say God is in heaven, what we really mean, not that He's only in heaven, it just means He's above us. We don't comprehend Him, so we express He's in heaven. It's more like an expression of He transcends our intellect, and therefore He's in heaven. But not that you're limiting Him in heaven. Number two, when you say God is everywhere, that expresses Himself within our world through all that happens in our life. So when we want to say God is everywhere, what we mean to say is we're not limiting Him to everywhere. We just mean to say that everything in our life is God, meaning it's God who runs our life. Now, everything where is within God, that's the deeper reality. God is not contained in everywhere. He contains everywhere. That means God is not the world. The world is within Him. And the last thing is that we have to bring God into us. Let God in, which is letting God in our heart. So now that we know that God is something we can never understand, because not because of our limitation, but God is not something that's understandable, because that's not what God is, not intellect. And now that we know that God is everything is in God, now we get to the third question of our course. How did God come to be? How did God get here? All of a sudden, Vayavai, God is here. Now, in general, this is a big question that scientists always discuss. Because in the science world, scientific world, everything has a cause and effect. Nothing just happened. There's something that caused this to be. So how did God get here? So something caused that. There was someone that once gave a lecture. I forgot which astronomer. He gave a lecture in a big hall explaining about science and creation. And one old lady says, you know, I don't agree with everything you said. I feel the entire universe is sitting on the back of a turtle. You know what a turtle is? A turtle. A turtle is a tzav. So the whole world is on the turtle. That's the cause of it. So the scientist says, okay, but what is that turtle sitting on? Well, there's another turtle that under that turtle, that's where the turtle is sitting on. So he says, and what's that turtle sitting on? It goes all the way to the end. The point is, everything we always look at it as a cause and effect. So in our world, we can't understand how is God here and nothing caused it to be here. How does that happen? So if you ask anyone, who gave us an iPhone? Who created the iPhone? No, Steve who?
Steve Jobs.
Okay. Who invented light bulbs?
Edison.
No.
Yes, Edison, Thomas Edison. I remember him. Come on, you're going back. Who developed the airplane?
They all did, right?
The brothers. Now, I want to ask you one more question. You ready for this one? 2 + 2 = 4.
Today.
Who the who? Who no. 2 + 2 = 4. Who invented that?
You did. Very good.
No, seriously.
You did.
Is that a question or not a question? When I say to you, who invented a light bulb? Yeah, Thomas. You said Edison. Who invented the phone? This guy. Who invented that 2 + 2 = 4?
Euclid.
Hashem.
Who invented that?
Euclid.
The answer is, listen to this. The answer is, this is not something that's invented. Why?
Discovered.
I'll tell you, it's discovered. Why? Because when you take 2 and you add 2, what do you have? You don't have to invent that 2 + 2 = 4.
You do.
You don't.
It's a fact.
No. Inventing means you're bringing something that wasn't here in our world. When I take 2 + 2, I'm not taking something new. The 2 was here and the other 2 was here. I'm not bringing anything new to this world. There's 2 ice creams and there's 2 ice creams. So nothing is new. I'm just telling you that right now I have 4. Did you understand what I just wanted to bring out? Yeah, what's your point? Say.
Someone had to invent the numbers.
The numbers?
They gave it a name.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
But you're talking about an organization. You're talking about, like, we're asking, what is God? How are we going to organize our thoughts from where we are at our level to think about something else, even two and two? How are we going to organize our thoughts? There's numbers. We, you know, if you do it in Roman numerals, it's different. You wouldn't say two and two. You might say it differently. In another country, you'd say
the nomenclature is different.
It would be the same concept.
But it's how do we discover it, and then how do we organize it, and how do we discuss it so we all understand what we're saying?
You put them on the table and you count them 1, 2, 3, 4, you have 4. So you don't have to invent it, you just.
You getting the difference a little? You're saying in every society it's a different expression?
Well, we discover it, we organize it, and we have to think of a way to discuss
it
within each other.
Describe it.
So we're going to describe it from one person to another. So our kids go to school and they learn 2 + 2 = 4. But if we lived in another country, they would say it differently. But they're actually studying, discovering, and doing the same thing.
Eileen, what are you saying?
It doesn't seem like we invent or anything. Everything is already there, right? It's just our discovering, or God allows us to at some point see things. Like, why can we send people to the moon now, but we couldn't send people to the moon 100 years ago? Like, it was all there. It wasn't like anything new was created in the world. It was just revealed.
It had to be analyzed.
Okay, I mean, the truth is, then you're saying what King Solomon said. King Solomon was the most wisest man that ever existed. He says, "Ein kol chadash tachas hashemesh." There's nothing new under the sun, meaning everything is there, you're just discovering it. Okay. But what I mean by discovering, what did I say, by Thomas Jefferson?
Invented.
What I mean by invented, let me explain to you. I agree with you that all the potentials were there. I'm not disagreeing. Electric was always there, and everything was always there. Inventing means in our world, it didn't exist. Means as humans, we didn't know about it. And now you invented something I didn't know. Was it in potential there? Of course, if not, it wouldn't be here. It's not like they brought electricity and created electricity. They're revealing the electricity that was always here, but it was not in our world. So I call it invented. 2 + 2, I don't have to invent anything. The fact that I have 2, and I have 2, it's going to equal 4. Yeah.
Well, you can't really discover a new number.
You could, or you can't.
You can't. You have to invent a new number.
There is no. It goes up to 10. I don't know any number more than 10.
There's an infinite amount of numbers, right?
Huh?
There's an infinite amount.
It's just more. It's you know what I mean. It's more zeros. In Judaism, I think also in math. It stops by 10, and you just keep adding the 0, 0, 0, 0, so it's 100, it's 1,000, it's 10,000, 100,000, a million, it's just another 0.
It's like natural numbers, right? It's like natural numbers, but when you add decimals in, it really changes the shape.
Okay, so I'll tell you a little secret. When God asked Moshe to take the Jews out of Egypt, what did Moshe say to God? He said, when I come to the Jewish people and they ask me your name, what should I tell them? Yeah, that's what he asked God. When I come to the Jewish people and they ask me your name, what should I tell them?
I was, I am, and I will be.
1 second. The answer that God gave him is the answer to what? To our question, which is, how did God come to be? Look at this, and this is really the fundamental, guys, because if you have this answer, this is what God told Moshe, 2-3 words. And he says, this is who I am. You can't describe me by any name. You can't describe me by anything, but I'll tell you who I am. Eyeh asher eyeh. Which I'll soon tell you what that means. So let's just read text 17, on page 17, 10a and 10b. Read.
Moses said to God, "When I come to the children of Israel and inform them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' they will respond, 'What is his name? What should I tell them?'"
And then what does he answer? Text 10b, page 17.
God replied to Moses, "Eyeh asher eyeh."
Stop. What does it mean, "Eyeh asher eyeh"?
I am
who
I am.
I am who I am.
I am who I am.
I am that
everything. I'm everything. There's whatever. Tell me whatever you feel. There's no one wrong or right. I just want to hear how you perceive God's answer to Moshe. What do you say?
I will be what I will be.
I will be what I will be. Okay, so that's Osa Eya.
I am that I am.
I am that I am.
But I almost feel like he's saying, let them decide what they believe.
Who I am. Okay, so whoever I am, what they think I am.
Like when you say, whatever will be, will be.
It will be. Okay. What do you say? Everyone agrees? Okay, so here is an interesting thing. When God said, Eyeh asher eyeh, the word eyeh, the root of the word eyeh, comes from the word, like in Hebrew, haya, yeh, or haya, which is, it is. What God was really telling Moshe, my existence, Eyeh, who I am, is I exist by my existence. Mm-hmm. Listen to this. Everything else that is in this world, in the universe, whether spiritual, physical, is existing by something else that's causing it to exist. Agreed? There's nothing that exists. Everything has something that causes it to exist. So electricity, there's light, is because of electricity, everything, the sun gives light, everything has a cause. God is saying to Moshe, Eyeh, my existence. You know how I exist. Eyeh, my existence is for myself. There's nothing that causes me to exist. I am the way I was. I am because I am. Not because something else is making me am. Eyeh, me. Asher Eyeh. What makes me exist is my existence. There's no cause, so I should be an effect from a cause. Everything else has a cause. So if the cause is not there, the thing doesn't exist. So if there's no sun, there's no light. If there's no food, a person can't exist. If there's no soul, your body doesn't function. Whatever. If there's no air, there's no growth. Everything has a cause and effect. God is saying, Eyeh, my existence is Asher. What's causing it to exist? Eyeh, my existence is causing myself to exist. There's nothing else that's causing it. So my whole existence doesn't exist from a cause. In Kabbalistic words, it's called, where is the page there? Turn to the page. Page 16. You see, do you have on the page God versus everything else? Do you see that?
Yeah.
Everything, an entity that exists. Now let's go to God. An existence unlike any other form of existence. Number two, everything is contingent existence. What mean contingent existence? There's nothing that could exist in this universe unless there's something causing it to exist. God is a necessary existence. It's not that there's God could or not. It's a necessity. It has to. Number three, everything else is dependent on another thing, and God is an independent existence. So what God is telling Moshe, I want you to know, yeah, I am. And here's where you expect, what's the high limb? That I am, who am I? I am an existence that exists from its own. Text 11, read text 11. On page 18.
This phrase conveys that God's existence is not an ordinary existence. We could summarize the concept as such. God is the existence that exists. In other words, he is an essential, an absolute, rather than a contingent existence.
There's any other questions on this, or you understand this? Anyone have a question on this before we get to the last question tonight? Do you understand how God exists?
Of course. But sometimes there is, you know, proportion like Hashem nigla le Moshe or Echshu, tada, b'snei ha-boer, medaber elav be'ar Sinai. As Echshu...
He's asking a question.
So how is anywhere...
He's saying that, like, we read a lot of times that God revealed himself to Moshe on the burning bush. He came at Mount Sinai. So that means God has different images, different ways of that, you know, God comes to. So how does that happen if God doesn't have an existence that exists and doesn't have any form of existence? So how could he exist in an existence? Okay, we're going to, that's the next lesson. So that's why you're coming back. In the Torah. Yeah,
what was the question?
How do you know that that's what Hashem said to Moshe?
He gave us the Torah.
No, in the Torah it says. In the Torah, read in Parshas Shemois, in I think chapter, I'll tell you which chapter. Chapter 3, verse 13, in Shemot, in Exodus, chapter 3, verse 13. This is the conversation. The last thing I want to end off tonight is God a he, a she, or a they. What do you think, Chevra, after learning now, is God a he? He's not a he. He's not a she, and he's not a they.
All of the above.
Because he's not all of the above. He's not in the form of an existence that exists of an existence. His whole existence is from him. So how could it be a he? How could it be a she? How could it be? He's nothing. He's not in that category.
He's probably transgender.
The problem is. The problem is. The problem is that in the Torah. That's really the problem. In the Torah, it does refer to God as he, and also as she. Many times I'll show you it says she, and sometimes they. So the question is, if God is not in any form or shape, and we can't even understand the whole thing, how could he be a he or she or they?
Because we're humans.
No. Nothing to do with humans. So I'll tell you a little secret. You ready for this secret? And this is where you're going to be able to differentiate when God uses the he for himself, when God uses the she for himself, and when God uses the they. So let's read text 12, page 20. Read. You have it?
God created the human in his image, in the image of God. He created him. Male and female, he created them.
So what does it say here in the Torah? God created man in whose image? In God's image. And who did he create? Him and she. So they're both in God's image. So God is a he and a she.
And a they.
But God is above all of that. And the answer is very simple. When God refers to God as he, it means that God is acting as the masculine. When God refers to God as she, it means God is acting as the feminine. Acting. Not that he is. And when God refers to God as they, it means he's both. What does that mean? What's the difference between masculine and feminine?
Sun and moon.
Sun and moon. Oh, who did you hear that from? Sun and moon. It's true, by the way. Sun and moon. So, wait. The sun, what does the sun do, and what does the moon need to do to be able to get the light from the sun?
What is the question?
What does the sun do, and what does the moon need to do to get light from the sun?
The sun provides the light.
And what does the moon do?
Has to rotate around the...
But in order for the moon to be light, what does the moon need to do to get the light from the sun? It has to be in a position to receive the light and be a reflection, right? If it's not in the right position, you don't see the moon, like with the beginning of the month, right? So the moon is the receiving, and the sun is the
giver.
Now, let's take a husband and a wife. One second, don't get upset here. I know everyone's getting upset here. Don't get upset. If when a husband and a wife want to have a child, right? Who is the creator that makes the child really develop? Is the woman. Why? Because the woman, the child sits in the mother's womb for 9 months, and that's where the child actually develops and develops and develops till you have a child. But what does the husband give to this? The seed, the sperm. So when the husband and the wife want to create, with God's help obviously, a child, who is providing the sperm? The husband. Who's receiving it? The wife. And then what does the wife do with what she receives? She creates with her body the child, right? So when it comes to create a child, who, in order for the wife and the woman to be the creator of the child, she needs to be in a position of receiving from the masculine, which is the husband that's giving the seed. Now, us and God, we're married to God, by the way. I don't know if you know that. God is our groom, and we're his wife. Mazel tov. So, who provides us life? Who provides us life? God. Who provides us health? God. Who provides us wealth? God. So God is the provider. And what are we? The receiver. So when God is in the mode of providing to us, he uses the word he. But a lot of times, the Torah says, like Shechina, there's 100 places in the Torah where it says God is a she. That's when God is in the mode of receiving from us. So I'll give you an example of what that means. When God is enjoying the people's actions, it says God, you bring a sacrifice and God enjoys our sacrifice, so God enjoys our mitzvahs. So you are giving God pleasure. So when God receives pleasure from us, he's the she and we're the he. Because we're providing the pleasure and God is receiving the pleasure. You get what I just said?
Yes.
So, is God a he? No. Is God a she? No. Is God a they? No. But when God is in the mode of providing, he uses the word the masculine, which is the provider, the giver. When God is in the mode of receiving from us, God is the she. And when it's both together, like the day of the wedding, then it's they. But not because God is a she or a he or a they. He's not a he, he's not a she, he's not a they. But it's the way God is acting with us. That's where it changes in the Torah. Sometimes the Torah uses he, sometimes a she, and sometimes a they, in the way God acts with us. But God is not a he, not a she, and not a they. Is it clear or not?
Yep.
Anyone have any questions? Because we're concluding right now or no? Okay, I just want to end off with one little story. There was once a group of Jews that were discussing that if they would have been God, how they would have created the world. And true, this is a real story. So one rabbi got up, it was the rabbis, and said, if I was God, I would have made this world that no one should be ill, no illness, no sickness.
Okay.
Isn't that nice? A world with no illness. All the hospitals will just be for birthing centers. And doctors will be just whatever. They'll be retired. Number two, a guy got up and says, if I was God, I would make sure there wasn't any poor people everyone will have everything they need. Number three, I said, I got up, and he said, if I was God, I would make sure there was no hatred. Everyone would love each other, so there won't be any wars. Imagine no Ukraine and Russia war. Can you imagine such a thing? And now Putin would be so happy if he doesn't have to have a war.
One party.
He would be so happy. And everyone was getting up. So the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, got up. And he says, I want to tell you a little secret. If I was God, I would create the world exactly the way God created it. Because if God created it this way, it's the most best way it could be. You're asking, why is everyone sick? And why is everyone fighting? And why is it that? God is above any level of comprehension. So what, you're going to try to understand? But if God made it, it must be the best way. God, we're going to learn later, if God makes mistakes, does God change his mind? Does God regret that he made us? Was it worth it for God to have a world? He would have been better off without us. Why did he have to make this? That's what we're going to discuss later. Yeah, what's your question?
Didn't God create this world as a punishment?
As a punishment?
For Adam. Because he ate from the tree.
No, but Adam was created as part of the world. It's just, God didn't have to create the world to begin with, but he didn't create it as a punishment. He created the world the way it should be. But Adam ate, so therefore the world became a little different. But it's not a punishment. God didn't make the world to punish us. He didn't have to make the world if he doesn't want to punish us. You don't make us, you don't get punished. I want to thank you all for joining, and hope to see you all next week. Be'ezrat Hashem. Did you enjoy it? It gave you a little different, a different level. So guys, I want to see you all coming back with much more questions than this week, okay? Thank you so much.